Welcome to Chase Your Dream, a podcast that believes that all dreams can come true if you have the courage to pursue them. Each week, we deliver the stories of a common person being successful by chasing the dream. I am your host, Shoman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Chase Your Dream. So today we have among us someone who is a stroke survivor and who has also taken a movement and making this world a better place to live. So our audience wants to know more about you.
Thank you, Sherman. So I guess I was really surprised when I woke up. It was 6 years ago now. And I felt really funny, but I didn't know what was going on. So I got my phone out and texted my friend and told her I was not meeting her for breakfast. And the text turned out really funny. I couldn't read it. So I said, I'll text her later. And I put the phone down. I rolled over on my left-hand side, and I had the most imaginable headache hit at that point. And despite the pain, I fell asleep. Mm-hmm. The next time I woke up, I knew I was in real trouble because my right side was completely paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And so I knew at that point I would either have to get up out of bed or give up. So I got out of bed by rolling onto the floor and I dragged myself across the carpet with my left hand. And I got to the door, which was closed, and so I had to reach up and grab the handle. Well, I didn't reach up very well because my right side was stuck to the floor. So I don't know how many times I reached up for the handle, but I finally clicked the door open. And I was so tired by this point, I needed to take a rest. And I don't know how long I rested, but I finally had enough strength to crawl my way down the hall. And halfway down the hall, I just ran out of gas and I was stuck. I couldn't move. Now, I knew my husband was at home because I could hear the TV downstairs. And I knew he would come up for soda at some point, but I didn't know when. The interesting thing is, something went crash, and I don't know what it was, and he doesn't either, but he came upstairs and he found me on the floor. And the first words out of his mouth were, "Marcia, are you okay?" And at that point, I realized I couldn't say anything at all. So he said, "Marcia, can you talk to me?" And I couldn't. So then he said, "I'm gonna call 911. And at that point I nodded yes. So it probably took a few minutes for the paramedics to arrive. And the first things they said was, "When did she have her stroke?" And before that minute, neither my husband nor I thought of the word stroke. And he was devastated. I probably didn't think anything at all because at this point I was almost unconscious. Yeah.
So here I just want to ask you, prior to dialing of 911 and all those things, what was the thing that is going on your mind at that point of time?
I have to get to my husband. Because if I couldn't get to my husband, I couldn't get to help. So it was Sunday when I had my stroke. If I'd had the stroke Monday through Friday, I wouldn't have gotten help and I probably would have died.
So after this stroke, what are the changes that have taken place on your body?
So immediately following the stroke, I couldn't walk. I mean, so I was paralyzed in the right side. And I got a little bit of movement back that day in the hospital. But I had very little movement on my right-hand side. I couldn't swallow very well. I couldn't speak very well. So when you're paralyzed, you think mostly of being paralyzed in the outside, but it's actually paralyzed all the way through. So when I had my lunch, which was pureed liquid, I had to drink it straight on, and then I had to move to the left, swallow, and then I moved to straight on again. And that's because people who've had a stroke, and they don't have a choking reflex. And so if I swallowed my liquid straight on, I would choke and could probably, the water or whatever it was could go into my lungs and cause pneumonia. And again, they don't like that. Yeah.
So what was the first symptom which actually prompted you that you are having some uncomfortability on the body?
Uncomfortable?
Yeah. First symptom which you found out that you are... Once you have already told us, but still I want to feature it more. What are the...
So I probably would say that out of a 10 scale, 1 being almost none to 10 being the worst, I had a 9-point problem with my whole right side being in agony. And it was actually in agony for about 2 years. I still have a foot cramp. So my foot cramps every day, even now. And I still have a little bit of pain on the right-hand side. I mean, compared to what it was, I would say I completely ignore it now. But it took probably 2 years before my right hand side felt, I'm not going to say normal because it never felt normal, but to the point where it wasn't in agony all the time. So it was in pain, but not agony, if you can understand the difference. Yeah. And after 2 years, it gradually decreased bit by bit by bit until probably about 4 or 5 years in, I just ignored it.
So I, again, coming back to that, the day when it has happened, now from your residence, you have been transferred to hospital. Mm-hmm. So in those transformation period, what was the thing that is going on your mind, whether you are conscious or unconscious at that point of time?
So I was unconscious. They loaded me into the ambulance and I lost consciousness. And the first time I woke up, I was in the hospital and I was dressed in a hospital gown and they had a needle in my arm. And the thing that I remember most is my husband was there. And I said, okay, if he's here, it's all right. And I went back to sleep. So I don't actually remember much other than saying that my husband was there. That evening, I was still in the ER, and a physical therapist came by and said, we're going to take a walk. I went, a walk? Okay. This is going to be interesting. So my right side had gained a little bit of momentum, not much, but a little bit. So she put a belt around me that was about 3 inches wide. And she put it around my waist and she held me up as she walked me around the nurse's station. And I would say I was more or less clomping like Igor does in Young Frankenstein. So step, clomp. Step, clomp, step, clomp. Now, I didn't fall down during this exercise, but if she hadn't been holding me up, I would have been down on the ground. And when I got back to the bed, the only thing I can remember is to be so grateful I was back down there, and I went to sleep right away.
What kind of things do you do, like, say, in those times, basically, like speech therapy, then occupational therapy, physical therapy. Take us to those therapy side now.
Yeah. So I had speech therapy. And she told me that I was both aphasic and apraxic. And I really didn't talk much at all. Now, when I got to the rehab hospital, I was still not talking much. And in fact, I didn't talk much until about 3.5 years into stroke recovery. So in all, I had 4 speech therapists. And the 4th one said we were done. And she said she'd given me all the tools that she could give me to make me better. So all I had to do was practice. Well, I'm not sure I think that's really true, because when she was done, I still couldn't speak a lot. So I decided to try to find my own way of beating this apraxia. And I found a chiropractor that did low light laser therapy on my head. And this was 2 years after the stroke. And he said, I don't know if this will help you. I'm willing to try it. If you haven't gotten better after 4 or 5 times, it doesn't work for you. So I said, okay, is there anything that will hurt me? And he said, no. So I gave it a try. And the first day after I had the treatment, I talked a little bit better. I went, okay, this is pretty good. So I actually went back, until the coronavirus came out, I went back to see him once a month. And the reason was that after I was done being treated for my stroke, he also treated me for Alzheimer's disease. So the thought is that you have these membranes and continues to magnify them, if you will. And the thought is that if you keep them magnified, you're going to reduce your chance of getting Alzheimer's. Well, people who've had a brain injury like a TBI or stroke are 25% more likely to have Alzheimer's. So I want to do everything I can to get past that if I can. So the second thing that I did is I tried neurofeedback. And neurofeedback is something I'd never heard of. I had another chiropractor say that it might help me, and I went home and I studied it. And I found that 85% of the people who had traumatic brain injury who had neurofeedback got better. And I could find no negative side effects. So I said, this I've got to try. Well, I tried it, and again, the first day that I was in the office, I found that I was speaking better. So I went, okay, this is clearly a good thing to do. So after 16 sessions, I talk like I do now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So another thing that I did is I joined Toastmasters, which is a speaking organization. And it took 7 months before I had the courage to stand up and give my speech, my first one. And I didn't know if I'd actually say something. So I had a slideshow just in case. And I got there the day of my speech. And I was called up. I went to the front of the room, turned on my computer, said the first sentence, and it went perfectly. I went, woohoo! This is going really well. Started the second sentence and nothing. Completely blank. Now, I knew what I wanted to say, but I couldn't get it out of my mouth. And I'm going, uh-oh, this is not going to go well. So I tried it 6 times. And on the 6th time, I said the sentence. I was able then to finish my speech. I sat down and I was so proud, not because my speech was good, because it wasn't, but I had actually finished it.
So here I want to ask you, apart from the medical practitioners, the doctors and all, you are grateful to whom for the support they have given it to you?
So I'm grateful to my husband because he took time off from work to be with me every single day. He made sure that our home was in a place where I could actually be at home all the time. And he worked from home then, and that's not usual for his company, but he did it. So I'm grateful to him. I'm grateful to my friends who were compassionate. I'm grateful to all the speech therapists, the occupational therapists, the physical therapists. I mean, all of them did a really terrific job keeping me motivated. I had to work out every single day. And whether I liked it or not. So if I said, I can't do it today, then you get in a pattern where you stop doing it. And I couldn't do that to myself. So I did it every single day. So let me tell you, in the beginning, that meant that I got up, maybe I brushed my teeth, and I went back to bed and slept. I got up, took a shower, went back to bed. I mean, it took me all day to do those things. Two things for quite a long time. You know, the other thing that I'm really grateful for is that when I finally went out of the house and met some new people, I told them that I'd had a stroke. And they were kind to me. So when I went to the Northern Virginia Business Referral Roundtable, which is a networking group, and I told them, they just let me take my time. And that was really special for me. So I've actually either been really lucky, or people are just always really special if they know that you have a problem.
So for how many, I want to know the duration of your hospitalization.
I was in the hospital for 4 days, and I was in the rehab hospital for 2 weeks. And then I went home for home health care for 6 weeks. I had no health care for 2 weeks, and then I had two months of outpatient outpatient health care. So I go to the hospital and do health care and then go back. And then I hired my own physical therapist and I had her for a year.
So recovery is physical, but also psychological.
Yeah.
So has your thinking changed prior to stroke and after stroke? Your thinking matter?
I'm going to say yes, but I don't really know how. So my husband will also tell you that I've changed, and he also won't tell me how. I know. I think I am a lot more patient than I used to be. Because when you're sitting there and you can't type, so I started typing at 9 months after my stroke, and it took me all day to type 2 paragraphs, and I'm thinking like small paragraphs. And before, I would have been really mad, and I wasn't all that happy, but I still stuck with it because what else did I have to do? You know, I could either type or just sit there, you know? And I guess that's why I decided I would type so well that I could take notes while people were talking, right? Well, I'm not there yet. But I am close enough to where I can take notes that are good enough for my Toastmasters group. So I'm thinking that's okay.
So I want to know more about this Toastmaster International thing. So what, how they work, what they do?
Okay, so it's a nonprofit. They're around the world. They have 350,000 groups or so. And they meet, some clubs meet weekly, some clubs meet every other week, some clubs meet once a month. And they are volunteers, and the whole purpose is, well, there are two things. They want to make it possible for you to speak in public and speak well in public. And they want to make leadership something that is capable for people. So most people come in and they join a club and they think that's it. Well, it's not it. There is an area that some people belong to. There is a district that some people belong to. And so it's really up to you how much leadership you want. So I think the most important thing for me is that I got on the leadership track and became an area director. And as an area director, you have to do everything that is needed in the clubs. So I had to talk. So even though I didn't talk all that well in the beginning, I still had to talk.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button now. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Now back to the show.
So it's all about coming out of your comfort zone. So the push you have to give to yourself. So from where and how you motivate yourself?
I think that you have two types of people. The ones that are self-motivated and go out and do things on their own, no matter how difficult they are. And the kind that are not motivated and they sit at home. And like, I think the people who sit at home and don't take much effort they give up, right? Oh, woe is me. That's not me. It can't be me. So I don't care. Like, I did the stupidest things sometimes, but I still did them because otherwise I'd be staying at home. So there are a few times when I wasn't walking very well, and yes, I fell down. Did I tell anyone? No. Because then they would say, well, you can't go walking then by yourself. Well, I can't wait for you to come home from work and walk with me. And I know that when my husband comes from work, he really doesn't want to walk anyway. So that means that I would be sitting at home. So yeah, I went out and walked, and sometimes I fell down.
So now if you see, what are the damages that stroke has done to you?
So the damages that I've got still are mostly, again, on my right-hand side. It's not as strong as the left side. My right foot is always cramping. My knee, hip, it's like if I want to go running, it's like it lags behind my left side, so I just can't fit a normal pace, so I actually don't run anymore.
Okay.
And the reason we don't run anymore is that I fell and dislocated my elbow. So I thought, maybe I shouldn't run.
So now tell us more about this movement, stroke forward.
Yeah. What about it?
We want to know more about it.
Oh, so Stroke Forward is actually a book that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And it describes the stroke from my perspective, but it also describes it from the people that were my caregivers, like my sister, my husband, my friends. And it talks about stroke from the doctor's perspective as well. So it's, I mean, when you have a stroke, it affects everybody around you. So I wanted to give people a glimpse of what it was like for my community. And it's funny, but so how I look at something is obviously very different from my husband looking at the same thing. So it was kind of interesting to see just where we weren't totally in sync on some things. I think the most interesting thing for me, though, is that when I talked to my doctors and said, would you write a little bit for my book? They said yes. Everyone that I asked said yes. So that tells me that they're doing something that they think is important too, like neurofeedback or laser therapy. And that's why I wanted to write the book, is that it needs to be out there that these are the things that work for me, and maybe they'll work for other people.
So now if you ask me, this is on the other side of the table, if you ask me what are the changes I find in you prior to stroke and now stroke, so you have become an author now.
Yeah.
So that is one of the biggest changes after the stroke that I've come up.
Yes.
So one thing also that you follow a very holistic lifestyle or a methodology in those terms of, so throw some light on that, man, how it helps your curability part or how it helps to maintain your balance in life, this holistic method of things which you follow.
It's really hard for me to think about holistic. So from a food perspective, we eat organic foods. And I eat organic meat occasionally, like once every 2 weeks or maybe once a month. From a doctor's perspective, so I found that the doctors who helped me the most were the ones that actually were holistic in nature. So they're looking at the whole body, not just, oh, your arm doesn't work very well, or what's wrong with your foot? They're looking at the whole me. I found that very... I think that I found the holistic medicine the most important. Because rather than thinking about, oh, I'm a doctor and this is what I learned, they're looking at me and they're going, okay, she's a patient and she needs this. What do I have that might help her? Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you are a woman of many talent. So you own business, you are now an author also. So I just want to understand from your business point of view, currently where you are standing and previously when you were completely fit, I mean prior to stroke or that. So from the business perspective, where are you standing? Prior and post.
Okay, so prior to the stroke, I was a businesswoman who worked for herself, and I would actually go out to clients and change the way they perceive themselves. So I would do a shift in brand, if you would. today I am a businesswoman, again for myself, and the only thing that I'm selling is StrokeForward. The reason why is that I think there's so much that needs to be done to make the patients who have had a stroke or who are in the process of building up cholesterol and heart disease and all that stuff, how do we make them look at how they're doing and go, oh, wait, I don't need this hamburger. I don't need this fast food. How do we stop them from doing the things that they're doing that is killing them? So
those stroke is known to us since ages, but according to you or according to our myth, we are not concerned about stroke in that way till it happens to us.
Yeah.
So your book to that extent will give us a thinker how to prevent stroke or how to take actions when stroke came.
Yeah.
So keeping this in mind, so this is the only book or there are series to come?
Well, I think there's going to be more in me. I don't know what it is. But I think I've got more in me.
So tell us more about the book and how it can be beneficial to us.
Okay, so again, it's Stroke Forward, How to Become Your Own Healthcare Advocate One Step at a Time. It is available on Amazon.com. So my husband knew nothing about the hospital when he was there. And so he had to learn day by day by day how to take care of me, how to decide when the doctor said they were going to do something, whether or not it was really the right thing to do for me. So I think that if you are someone who is in the hospital, not wanting to do or not knowing what to do, you pick this up, you read it, and it's not all that long. And you get a sense for, okay, these are the things that I can do. And, oh, yeah, so this is something else I can do. So it gives you the roadmap to where you can start from. And I think that's really important, especially since so many people really don't know that much about being in the hospital, right? For stroke patients, I think that it's nice to know that there's some place that knows that, hey, this is somebody who survived a stroke and did really well. I can too. And there are a number of stroke survivors out there that are doing really well. So they can go on Facebook, they can join virtual groups. But there are a number of people who will tell you, never give up. And I would do the same thing, never, ever, ever give up. So I think it's important for people because this is my way of how I never got up, never gave up, and how I'm reaching forward. Because I think that neurofeedback is amazing. And when you talk to people, nobody's ever heard of it.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So tell us more about how to take prevention measures from stroke.
Well, the first thing is that people, and I'm going to say that I'm taking an American view because this is the culture I know. So most people around me are overweight. So they need to think about, how should I eat and eat properly? which it means a whole shift in how they're thinking about how to eat. They have to think about their cholesterol. They have to think about smoking. Are they smoking? If they are, please stop. They have to think about drinking. If they're drinking too much, please cut down, you know? It's really the simple things that everybody knows they should be doing, but they're not doing.
So the basic is healthy eating.
Healthy eating is definitely one thing.
So do you know? Yeah, Karen, please.
No, I mean, that's the most important thing. I mean, food is medicine. And if you eat poor food, then you're eating like the wrong medicine.
So do you now exercise regularly?
It's 90 degrees to 100 degrees, so no. Okay, so with COVID, you can't go to the gym, right? It's 90 to 100 degrees outside. So I am very bad and I say no. When it gets down to 70 or 80, I will go out again.
Okay. So anything else you want to share?
No, this has been such an exciting meeting today.
So if you are on my shoes, what more could I ask you that I didn't?
If you're going to have a second stroke, what would you do?
I think we can read your book and can come to the conclusion of that.
No, because every stroke that you have is different.
Okay.
So every stroke that happens throughout the world is different. Okay. That's kind of frightening.
So tell us more about that. I want to know.
So, you know, the funny thing is that people after their stroke think about having a second one. And I have to admit that I did for a while. But I got to the point where I started thinking, if I am so worried about having a second stroke, why am I living, right? So I put that aside and went on living. So the way I look at it is, nothing you can do will actually make you say, oh, wait, I'm going to have a stroke now. You never know. So why bother worrying about it, right? Mm-hmm. So if I have another stroke, I have another stroke, and I just figure out how to go from there.
So how many strokes can a human have?
That is a really good question. So the most strokes I've heard about is 4 or 5.
Five, okay.
Yeah, but to be honest, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. And those 4 or 5 strokes, they are survivors or not?
They are survivors. I mean, eventually, a stroke could kill you. I mean, one stroke can kill you, obviously. But the people I've heard about have had, I mean, most people have one stroke. A few have two, fewer have three, you know, so it just all depends. That wasn't a very good answer for you, is it?
No, but again, yes, means I'm really honored that you are there in my show because you are so motivational and this interview is going on in such a motivational way that there are a lot of things which are actually back of my mind is coming on, and so I really want to carry it long and stretched it for a time. Time is going on. Anyway, so any message for my listeners?
Yes. So if you're a stroke survivor, never give up. You have to commend yourself for the little things that you do, as well as the big things. But the little things, and I do mean little, could be as small as moving your hand a little bit. If you hadn't moved your hand before, and today you move it a little bit, that's a big win for me. And it's these little wins compounded that actually make you, I am better because I took every single win and built on it. Yeah.
Thank you. So with that tone, we come to the end of the show. It is me, Soumen Sen Gupta, along with Marcia Moron. We are signing off for the day. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us this week. Don't forget to subscribe us on any platform, be it Anchor.fm, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, JioSaavn, Castbox, etc. Also tell your friend, family members and enemies about the show. Be sure to tune in next week for another new episode. Myself Soumen Sen Gupta signing off. Not before saying all dreams can come true, provided you have the courage to pursue them.